Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
First pitch into right field on a line right at Grossman. That ball was hit well, and the Sox will fall a run short in Detroit this July 4th.
NBC Sports Chicago, Jason Benetti, putting a period at the end of that sentence. It was 6-5 Detroit. Jose Abreu with a three-run homer in the ninth was not enough. Lucas Giolito was not enough. But you know what? Scott Merkin's enough. Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage on Monday. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Grody with you. Scores Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Scott Merkin, the White Sox are in first place. They have a terrific chance to get to the World Series. There's a trade rumor out there about Trevor Story. Do you believe it? Do you not believe it? Would you be in favor of it? Would that mean moving Tim Anderson? How would that go over? We have questions, Scott Merkin, and happy 5th and happy 5th of July to you.
Thank you. I'm sitting at gate A24 in the Delta Terminal in Detroit. I have to get to A12, but I'm proud that I've already made it from A36 to A24 without taking the tram here. So it's a good step on July 5th, Monday morning here. But, excuse me, in answer to all your questions, I believe it. I think, you know, the Sox, you know, under Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, have always been a team that's been aggressive, and they look for, you know, they always look to improve, and they look for the, you know, the biggest fit they can find. You know, keep in mind that they're going, if they go after a second baseman, you know, Nick Madrigal, who tore his hamstring, had surgery to repair it, and will be out for the season, will be back next year. They still firmly believe he's in their plans. So that's the issue. You know, Story has whatever is remaining of his contract for this season. So, you know, what do you give up for a guy who's basically going to be half a year rental, and understanding that market is going to be huge for a player as talented as him. And then to the other question, Tim Anderson is not moving. Tim Anderson is the shortstop. That is not changing. I can guarantee you that one. There's very few things in the 19 years I've covered this team that I'm certain of, and that is one of them. Tim Anderson is not moving from shortstop, so Trevor Story would be the second baseman if that happened, and it sounds like just discussions and that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, nothing ever surprises me on the White Sox because they try to make bold moves to improve this team, whether they're rebuilding or, you know, going for a World Series title.
So what level player do you think the White Sox would be willing to give up for somebody like Trevor Story?
Oh, wow, that, you know, that's very hard to say just because you don't know what they're asking, first of all. And, I mean, the interesting thing for the Sox is that most of their top young talent that's, you know, major league ready is major league playing right now. You know, so, I mean, Garrett Crochet is at the major league level. Michael Kopech's at the major league level. Yoan Moncada, major league level. You know, you guys have a time limit on this interview, so I'm not going to list every single guy who's on there. But, you know, Robert Jimenez, everyone else. The other guys are much lower down and, you know, very talented, but much further away. You're talking Jared Kelly, Andrew Dahlquist, Matthew Thompson. So, you know, it probably takes a little bit with no minor league season last year for other teams to get a better feel on these guys. But it's just a question of, you know, Rick Hahn's talked about, you know, kind of answering to both sides of the line there, and that this is not a one-off season for the White Sox. They're not saying, well, if we don't win in 2021, we're back to the drawing board. This is a window of 4 to 5 years at least that they can be competitive. So they're not going to tear it down to win this year. But in the same sense, you're not going to give up a really good chance to win it. I mean, you know, there is no clear-cut favorite in the American League right now. Boston's very good. Houston obviously took apart the White Sox at Minute Maid in a four-game series, but, you know, that's the regular season. So, you know, I think they're going to look at both sides of the equation and see what adds up for them.
Our guest is Scott Merkin. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. We've got Saturday Suckage on Monday here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum and Mark Grody. So we're discussing earlier, as long as you're looking for a rental, why not Javi Baez? He could play second base. He's not telling Tim Anderson to move. And he's played second base before, and he's terrific, and he's better than what they'd have there, and he'd be gone next year the way the Sox would like somebody to go away, because it would be a cheaper price. And by the way, Merck, this suckathon goes till noon, so you can list every White Sox player who's come on.
But I do have to travel 12 more gates to get to my flight, so I can't list them all at that point. But no, I mean that's an interesting call, and I think he played second on, was it the 15 team that went to the LCS? I want to say he was the second baseman for the Cubs. But you know, I mean, I think all, you know, the Cubs Sox trade might be a little, you know, because of the trades that have happened in the past, people kind of assume there might be a little extra pay there, or maybe a little extra ask there, but who knows? And who knows what the Cubs are even doing at this point? Obviously, they've lost 9 in a row and are, you know, a far distant shout from first place at this point. So we'll see what they, you know, what path they travel. But I think, I don't want to say any avenue is open for the Sox, but they're going to look at all possibilities in order to improve this team. They have a very good team. You know, they have a very good team. And they have a very good team with Madrigal out for the year now, with Robert out since like May 2nd, Eloy Jimenez out since spring training, Michael Kopech out for a month. You know, Lance Lynn has been on the IL. Tim Anderson's been on the IL. Jose Abreu has been knocked over 2 or 3 times in the field, yet keeps on going, but, you know, absorbs that kind of pain and contact too. So when you look at all they've done, and they're still at this point and still 6 games up in that division, which they should, you know, barring something really surprising, should win in a walkaway, you know, you say, man, we really have something special. Let's build on this and go forward.
It has not been this year, Merck, looking at yesterday's game, the Tigers 6-5 win over the White Sox. I don't even know how to describe Lucas Giolito's year. I guess up and down would be the simplest way to do it. And I think to me, the essence of his game yesterday was striking out the side in the fourth and looking dominant. And then in the very next inning, allowing a couple of runs. And even he said, Giolito said yesterday, that something is missing right now. What are you seeing? What is missing?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, I believe he had 2 hits on 0-2 pitches and 3 hits on 2-2 pitches, and he's pretty good. He's been pretty good at least the last couple of years, very good, actually, at putting guys away in those kind of counts. So I agree with him that, you know, he said he's missing something in his command. He's missing something in his put-away ability there. But, you know, he's, you know, it's a weird conundrum because you say, like, okay, you take the Boston start out on Patriots Day, which was obviously horrible, and he's had a pretty good year. Now, you can't keep taking starts out. You're not allowed to do that, obviously. But, you know, he's going into yesterday. I think he was 4-1 with a 2.89 in his last 8 starts. So I think he's been pretty good. He may not have been, you know, no-hit good against the Pirates last year across the board. But he's still given them, you know, pretty much what they need on a somewhat regular basis. But I think, you know, what Tony La Russa said post-game, what Lucas said, is he wants more. You know, he's not satisfied with being pretty good. He wants to be, he embraces that role as the number one guy in that set, even though he doesn't have to be, because you have Lance Lynn, Carlos Rodon has pitched that way this year, you know, so, I mean, Dylan Cease has made steps forward, Dallas Keuchel's had his moments too, so he wants to be that guy. So he was very frustrated, you could tell, in the postgame yesterday. But one thing about Lucas is, you know, and I don't want to say Lucas over anyone else, but you know the work is not going to lack in the next, you know, few days leading into his last start before the end of the first half in Baltimore. He's going to work with Ethan Katz and try to figure this out just like he has been all year. And I would still bet on him being, you know, even a higher level contributor than what he's done in the first half.
In my country, Scott Merkin of MLB.com, we call it spin rate. That's what's missing from Lucas Giolito. Josh Donaldson appears to be right and right and right, because StatCast showed Lucas Giolito's spin rate was down 10% from his last sort of, from his May 30th start. His slider was down 15%. So he's got some splaining to do. If he wonders why he can't get people out, it's, he can call it command, he can call it control, he can call it bearing down, whatever he wants. But it looks more and more like the sticky stuff was a huge reason he was getting people out. Does he get questioned about that? Does he answer this? Does he, what happens? He can't avoid the fact that his spin rate is down 10% or more.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to go into, you know, saying someone did this or someone did that when I don't know that for a fact, because there's a lot of guys across the board and guys who are still getting guys out regularly. And, you know, look at Lucas's last start against, if nothing else, a pretty good hitting Minnesota team. he was very good in that start. You know, as you said, he had the W, the team had the W, and that's all that mattered. And, you know, I see guys who are, you know, getting guys out whose spin rates are down. So I would say, you know, it's maybe something to look at, but I'm not going to say that he was doing this or doing that just because the spin rate. You know, the statistics are great. I love our Baseball Savant and StatCast tool, but you can't go completely by that all the time. I just think, you know, I really do believe that his command and his, you know, put away stuff is just off right now. And again, you look across the board and a lot of guys, you know, have their numbers adjusted across StatCast. So I'm not sure what that means one way or the other.
Jake Berger, single and a triple yesterday. It's been fun watching him. What have you made of that? And what is the future of Jake Berger and the White Sox?
Well, it's very interesting. We were debating this yesterday among us in Detroit in that, you know, Adam Engel is pretty close to being ready to come back. So what move do you make there? You know, is it Danny Mendick going down to the minors because he has options left? But then who's your backup shortstop if Leury Garcia is playing second? You know, Jake Berger's played four games of second base at AAA Charlotte, but that's a pretty big jump for a guy who's never really played that to go play that on a team that's, you know, winning the division. Now, granted, you're playing Minnesota, who's had an awful year, in Baltimore, who is just playing awful. So, you know, you can roll a little bit with some chances there, and maybe, you know, in a game like Dallas Keuchel pitches where he's a ground ball guy, you don't start Jake Berger at second base there. But, I mean, you can give him an opportunity out there. So it just depends. I think, though, the story is just tremendous. You know, I think this, if he is back at Charlotte on Tuesday, or if he's here the rest of the season and the rest of his career, it is just a tremendous story, just that, you know, he missed 3 years of baseball because of the two ruptured left Achilles. Well, you know, the rupture and the re-rupture of his left Achilles, if that is a medical term, which it probably isn't. And then, you know, the pandemic, 3 years away from baseball, aside from some instructional league action and that Car Shield league he was in last year, came on, crushed it at Charlotte, and earned his promotion. You know, and it's now talk about Jake Berger, the baseball player, with still a tinge of the Jake Berger, what a great story. But now it's more on what's he doing on the field. You know, and give credit to these young guys. You know, they maybe weren't as touted as some of the other guys, but, you know, Berger and Gavin Sheets, for example, have both come up and done a great job with their opportunities. So, yeah, I think Berger is one of the best stories I've covered in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years with the White Sox.
Scott Merkin is our guest. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. Saturday Suckage on Monday, part of the Suckathon that goes till noon on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We were discussing, Merk, just take you back, we were discussing Tim Anderson, Trevor Story, whether he moves, whether he doesn't, and you were very definitive, and you were, and I certainly get that, and that was the discussion when Manny Machado was in play. Tim Anderson was saying, I'm the shortstop. And when Manny Machado went to San Diego, he and some other veterans went to management and said, this Tatis Jr. guy, he's playing shortstop, and I will move to third. That's how much we want him in the lineup. So would you be surprised if Tim Anderson, if there was somebody out there who said, would prompt Tim Anderson to say, I'll move wherever you need to move me to bring this shortstop in if we can win the World Series, if he were to embrace it, if he were to come out and say it, do you think the Sox need that from him, or do they not even touch that idea of moving him lest they have him go public with some hard feelings at this point?
I don't think they. I think he would do it just because he's a total team guy first. You know, he wants to win a World Series before anything else, but I don't think they would touch that. I just don't see, what are they, 49 and 35, I want to say? So that's, what, 84 games in. I don't think at 84 games they're going to have a position switch, you know, with Tim Anderson, to, you know, when he's been established at shortstop and playing very good defense at shortstop. So, yeah, I just don't see it. I think anyone they acquire is going to play second base for the White Sox.
Sox All-Stars Liam Hendricks, Lance Lynn, and Carlos Rodon. Is that about right, Merk?
Yeah, I mean, there are other guys who had good cases. Tim was one. Yasmani Grandal, obviously, has had an interesting stat line, but a good year overall and had a great June. You know, Abreu, I know, draws a lot of respect from the players around baseball and has driven in a lot of runs, even if his, you know, numbers are down a little bit. But he's been through, you know, so much physical abuse on the field. you know, running into Hunter Dozier and getting hit in the left, the inside of the left knee with a pitch. So, I mean, he could have been in there. And Moncada would be another one, too. So, I mean, there's some guys who, you know, also warranted, but I think you can look at that in every team. And, you know, Hendricks, Rodon, and Lynn were all player votes. And, you know, the other guys weren't there on the player votes. The other guys weren't in the top two or in the, you know, three in the position. So that's kind of how it works. But a good representation. I think just the third, our great reporter and stat person, Sarah Lang, said that it's the third time in franchise history that they've had three pitchers in an All-Star game. And that last one was 2006 when it was Burley, Bobby Jenks, and Jose Contreras. So that's a, and another great story is Rodon, you know, who was non-tendered and was telling me the other day, you know, that when he signed that one-year deal, kind of a prove-it deal, all he wanted to do when he got to camp was show that he could start every 5 days. And he's done that and a lot more. And Lynn's been just, you know, even though you traded a good young pitcher in Dunning, who's going to probably do very good things for Texas over time, you got exactly what you needed in Lance Lynn for that rotation. And the same with Hendricks at the back end of the bullpen. Hendricks also, I should add, very proud that he was the first two-time All-Star as a native Australian. Dave Nilsson and Grant Balfour each made it once along with him, but now he holds the honor of the only two-time All-Star from Australia.
I always loved the Grant Balfour comparison because the countrymen just, they just have potty mouths all over the place, and it's not at anybody, it's at themselves. They just yell at themselves, and they're mad. And Grant Balfour took a lot of crap for looking like he was talking trash, but he was yelling at himself, and nobody let him yell at himself, and Liam Hendricks yells at himself, come on, you, and whatever they call themselves, I don't want to say it.
Yeah, Liam Hendricks used a colorful word to describe what he thinks the perception is of him is sometimes, and then kind of laughed and said he's glad the players could see through him. That was just kind of his competitive demeanor, but actually he's a pretty, you know, laid-back, chill guy when he's not trying to, you know, get the final three outs in the ninth inning.
And Lance Lynn is an All-Star based on just his quotes.
Yes.
He has the quote of the month.
I said the other night,
every month.
He would be a great late-night talk show guest. He might be a great late-night talk show host, you know? Although he's kind of like not soft-spoken but doesn't say a ton, but what he says is hilarious. You know, the I'm a big bastard quote is all-time great. already up on the top, going to be a tough one to break for the rest of the season, I think.
Is there any chance the Sox do something with him long-term, Merck, or no? I mean, it seems like he's a great match, but...
He does, but, you know, I mean, I think in deference to these guys, you work to get to free agency to explore that, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
I see, it could end up being the perfect fit, and he could end up being back for 2, 3, 4 years, who knows, but I think, you know, most of these guys kind of like to explore what's out there before they settle on anything.
All right, Mark, go catch your plane. We won't keep you from walking quickly to any more gates. Have a great time. The best way to see Detroit is by leaving it, so congratulations.
Yeah, I think that one of the nicer buildings in Detroit is this Delta Terminal here, so I'm kind of excited about it.
All right, there you go. And by the way, wait, I looked up, it'll be in Wagner, but this is one note for you, because you and I have an affinity for this band. I went back and looked at it popped up that in the bicentennial in America's 200th independence anniversary in 1976, there were celebrations all over the place, musical celebrations. So, in Tampa, at the new stadium in Tampa, the headliners were the Eagles. Also on the bill were Fleetwood Mac,
wow,
and Loggins and Messina.
Holy cow. That would be great for you and I to go see. I would still go see that show right now, today. And I think a lot of people are probably going on the radio right now going, who?
That's right.
The football team, the Eagles, the band is still together, but they are. Yeah. They are still going strong.
Yeah, they got Glenn Frey's kid. Vladdy Jr. Yeah, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Glenn Frey's kid and Vince Gill doing a great job.
I would go see that. All right. Thanks, Mark. Catch your plane.
Okay, guys. Take care.
See you, man.
That's Scott Merkin. He covers White Sox for MLB.com. And this is a 708 texter. Our text line, 312-644-6767. That's also the number that you could call, even though nobody does. If we do have a breaking phone call, then Trash Panda will let us know. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com.
Bears.com. 708 texter was listening very closely, Mark. Grody's low-key Bears got me.
It's just an involuntary response when I hear any... Right, when I hear... I don't even know what you said. It was something about bearing down, and I just said Bears.
Bear down, baby.
Yeah. Bears. You know what we should
Thanks for noticing, though, Texter. I appreciate it. That makes my day.
Yeah, every time we talk about the Cubs, we should have Trash Panda play the announcement that with the 11th pick in the NFL draft, the Bears select Justin Fields.
Bears.
Every time we talk about the Cubs, we should just have that, because that's the only palliative. That's the only thing that'll make it go away. 224 Texter, this is so good, and we're so pleased that you could join us on what we in my country call Monday. 224 Texter, very pleased to find out after waking up this morning that it is only Saturday. What are you guys doing for the 4th tomorrow? I was going to go to Stickney for fireworks, but probably will just blaze up and watch them on TV. We're happy to serve you.
That's 630
Texter. Driving to Sheboygan with family, and I'm subjecting my children to an all-time low Monday suckage. Vacation ruined. Thanks, guys. Well, I think it was ruined when you set out for Sheboygan. Just make sure when you cross the border into Wisconsin, you turn your watch back 20 years. 847 Texter, I have a honest question. In 5 years, are we going to look at the 2016 Cubs the same way we look at the 1985 Bears? Dude, you're 3 years behind. Try to keep up with the class. We were talking about that for a long, long time, and now it looks like that will finally be the case because they'll have to trade them away. We've been talking about
this for
years.
Hey, but here's the thing about all that. Hey, the Cubs would be lucky if they talked about the 2016 Cubs the way we talk about the 85 Bears. I've never understood how that would be a slight. That those guys are, because of that Super Bowl win, they are super celebrities thriving to this very day. So I've never understood why that would be a bad thing.
I think it's just because that Bears team seemed like 85 should have been the start of a run of getting two or three of those.
Yeah,
and
but they got
the
one.
The only
disappointment in either of these Cubs or that Bears era would have been if they hadn't won. Okay, like the idea that we are gluttonous and you have to have... The only way that these eras are good is if you win multiple? Come on! Multiple is like special. You got like the people who antagonize about the idea that the Cubs will have been a failure in this era are just idiots, because it's not. They won the World Series. Does it suck that they probably won't get another one? Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's a failure. And same with that Bears era. Would it have been nice if the Bears won two or three? Yes, but they won the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God, I'm hearing less. I'm just hearing less. It's just such a grabber thing.
No, but it's
greed.
True.
It's greed
true. I've never gotten that. Not many franchises win multiple titles in over a 3 to 5 year span. It just doesn't happen.
And
to antagonize by comparing the 2016 Cubs to the 85 doesn't make sense. Never has to me. Put it away. Stop it with that.
You would think that Cubs fans, of any fans on earth, would understand how hard it is to win the World Series. They just got greedy after the one. There's a lot of Cubs fans
that fine.
Got greedy.
I love the greed. I think greed is good. Yes, there should be a different expectations, but then to already, in the midst of the era, and that's what's happened. Like, even in 2017 and 18, well, if the Cubs never win another one, this is going to be a... What are you talking about? Most franchises don't go back-to-back. They don't win multiple. The Atlanta Braves, okay? And any Braves fan looks back at that era as the greatest of golden eras of all time. And we have this thing in Chicago where we like to play this little 2016 Cubs or the 85 Bears as if that would be a bad thing. That would be a spectacular thing if the 16 Cubs are like the 85 Bears.
And, I mean, we still talk about the 85 Bears, right? Like...
Yes.
We still talk about them.
Absolutely.
That's how great
they were. And it's not like they didn't win a ton in the 80s. It was even the years they lost, and it sucked. I hated it because I was just a fan. It was still great every single year. It was a blast in different sport because of 16 games, and so the regular season had heavy meaning, and it was fun to watch every individual game. But it's just, I am tired of that. Like, I feel like it is just an antagonizing thing from a lot of people who say that, like, they just want to discount. Like, I hate what's going on with the Cubs right now. It sucks that this thing is about to break up, that this version of the Cubs might be over by July 31st. But to in any way say that this was a failed era of Cubs baseball is ludicrous.
Go Bears!
Bears.
All right. Well, all I can tell you is this. Chicago is no Tampa. That's all you need to know. We are a failed city. And we can talk about that after we get back from our
You like it when I go off, don't you?
I not hear it much in your voice. And it is, I hear it, you know, unless I could hear that and stealing your stole Probasic and all that. And I understand what you're saying, be happy with one, but here's the thing with the Cubs. Here's why they're regarded as, you know, thank you for that, but you're choked. That's the way it looks. And here's why they're compared derisively to the 85 Bears. It should have been, like Pat Trashman has said, the start of something. But we were told the start of sustained success, winning more than one World Series, was the goal. The goal was not met. They won one, but they had all this young talent when they won that one. And then you saw them regress every year until the point where they didn't even make the playoffs. They were losing games. They were losing postseason games, playoff games. They were losing stuff at home. They were choking in new and different ways. And it wasn't what Cub fans were promised. If that's sustained success, that you're never going to win another World Series, then that's a misleading description of sustained success. But anyways, we'll come back.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Take the break.
Bears. No, I don't want to take a break. I want to make Trash Pando get his red ass, so I'm all for that. So go ahead, Mark.
No, I was just going to say that, like, you said the word choking, and it absolutely. I mean, the offense has been horrid in 2018, 2019, and 2020 when it absolutely mattered, and now we're seeing it again here in 2021, averaging just over 2 runs per game during this lousy 9-game losing streak that the Cubs have had. But the choking prior to 2015 was a lot different than the so-called choking now. Before that, it was the Cubs in 84 winning 2 games and then not being able to win another game in San Diego. It was getting into the playoffs in 89 and then losing to Will Clark and just getting completely pantsed. It was 2003 with Steve Bartman and all that went down in 2003. 07 and 08, you don't win a single damn playoff game. To me, those are different versions of choke than the ones that have happened in this era of Cubs baseball. It stinks, but the bottom line to me is, and we'll talk about how it stinks, but the bottom line, if we're already reflecting on this Cubs era, it will have been, I promise you, 10 years from now, this era of Cubs baseball will be looked back on fondly. Maybe the 85 Bears, if they're lucky, but probably not even that.
He's Mark Grody. As Mark Grody, he'll be back as Les Grobstein at some point, I'm sure.
A lot of people think that the Cubs, they didn't choke a lot. Okay.
Steve Rosenblum. It's Saturday Suckage. So what if it's Monday? It's still Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right on, baby. Yes, sir.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, Saturday Suckage on Monday, the Weck and Bake Club, always. And 469 texter, it's not Saturday Suckage, it's Holiday Suckage. Okay, all right, we're good with that. 262 texter. Our text line, by the way, is 312-644-6767. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. 262 texter, please do the rest of the show as less, Mark. Do a For That You Suck segment. Kenosha Aaron checking in.
For that you vigorously inhale.
Yeah, there you go.
That is correct. That's the better word for our particular show.
I was doing
It sucks, and it's kind of embarrassing.
It sucks, and it freebases.
Yeah, that too. So I can't do the math. So it's 42 and 40. So on June 11th, when we use all kinds of marking points when we figure this stuff out, right? So on June 11th, the Cubs were tied for first. They were 36 and 27. And then Anthony Rizzo said he wasn't vaccinated and won't be getting vaccinated. So since then, they've fallen to third place, and they've gone 6 and 15, and including losing 9 in a row. I don't know if you think that's baseball karma or what.
You know what I think sucked about yesterday in particular, in the Reds beating the Cubs 3-2? How in the world did the Cubs let Amir Garrett off the hook? I don't know if you were still tuned in at that point, but Amir Garrett looked like he had the yips in that inning. Like he was throwing he was high and tight on every pitch. It looked like he was going to walk the world. He did walk Ian Happ, Eric Sogard with a single, and then somehow, bad day for Wilson Contreras yesterday, hits into a double play. Like that. There are so many little moments during this losing streak where they're doing things that look amateurish, actually. Like you have to, like, Garrett's good, but you had to get to that guy yesterday. He knew, like, you could tell Garrett, even after that game yesterday, he knew that he got lucky, that he got out of it, and he's going to have to go re-examine himself after that game to figure out what the hell was going on. So that in particular, of all the year, there were lots of irritating mosquito bites in that game yesterday, but that I was like, okay, Cubs are going to tie this game. They're going to get a damn win. It's still going to suck, but they're going to get a win. And then Wilson Contreras hits into the double play and good night.
Amir Garrett has always been that guy for me. He could be scary good on the mound. He could be scary good to his own team. You just don't know what's going to happen because he is that emotional, animated, theatrical of a player. And the Cubs know it, you know, better than most, really. And I think you're right, but I think it sums up the core. It sums up what's happened to the Cubs when you talk about a team that can't get key hits, can't get many hits, period. And there's Wilson Contreras, the tying and potential winning run are on base. He is a guy you would want up there, and there's a 5-4-3 double play. See you later. You suck in Cincinnati, and now they're ahead of you. So you're in third place, and you're entrenched in third place. That's the kind of the way it went. And whether it was Garrett or anybody else, it's like the power of the Cubs being able to blow a situation does not matter who's on the mound at this point. It could be Williams Astudillo, and he would find a way to strike the Cubs out after going 3-0 on them. They'd be swinging and missing at 3-0 pitches. That's what I think.
Yeah, if you're just waking up, that is alarming that it has gotten so bad that the Cubs are, yes, in third place now behind the Cincinnati Reds. And the Cubs are 42 and 42. The Cubs are a 500 baseball team. Which, and these are, like, as if it's not been alarming enough during the actual losing streak, but there's damage being done now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you could handle losing 5 in a row or 6 in a row or whatever it is, but now you're losing your hold on whatever you considered your hold to be. Third place behind the Cincinnati Reds, 500, and you host the Phillies tonight, hoping that Zach Davies and his bullpen of merry men no-hitters can do it again against Matt Moore, and the fight fills tonight. Zach Davies is all we have.
You hope so, because Jake Arrieta is going, you know, he'll be losing tomorrow, and then it could reach 11 if Zach Davies isn't, and the bullpen isn't good. So the Cubs are 8.5 games behind. They're in third place, 8.5 games behind Milwaukee. The Phillies game tonight, 7:05 on the score. Zach's pregame starts at 6:30 right here on the score. We were talking earlier about the Cubs, 2016 Cubs, 1985 Bears, and just by comparison, tonight in Montreal, the Palais du Pucs, the most historic hockey city there is, the Tampa Bay Lightning could win their second straight Stanley Cup. They have a 3-0 lead, three games to none lead over Les Canadiens. And it's just simply the talent gap is so big, and Carey Price sucks, and especially against this team. But if you go back and look at little Tampa and big Chicago, and I was making this comparison, looking at what they have, the Hawks suck. And they have a bad coach, a bad executive. They have a bunch of executives with zero decency, according to a lot of reports. That's an organization. We haven't really talked about that. But they're simply morally bankrupt, it would appear. And that goes to the players. If the players knew what was going on with the video coach and they did nothing, Jonathan Toews on down, that it's just that there are players in that locker room who did nothing, then you're as guilty as the executives who created this warm and fuzzy image of a morally bankrupt team. So there you got the Hawks. They suck. Now the Bulls suck even with a coach who seems to know what he's doing, somebody who's not Jim Boylan, and a new executive group. The Bears have sucked at coach and quarterback and still do. There's reason for optimism, but they still suck until proven different. And the White Sox choked last year after being the first team to qualify for the playoffs and then finishing seventh in the 8-team playoff setup. And they have an excellent chance to redeem themselves. They have a great chance to win the World Series, but until they do, they haven't. So there you are. There's Chicago teams. Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup last year. They could win it again this year. The Tampa Bay Rays made the World Series last year. They could make it again this year on a payroll of about $2.50. The Bucks won the Super Bowl last year. This is Tampa, city of champions, and Chicago is dealing with just what I thought. So if you're watching, and here's how cocky.
Go Bears.
Here's how cocky Tampa has gotten. The mayor of Tampa, a woman named Jane Castor, was quoted as saying this: what we would like is for the Lightning to take it a little easy tonight, to give the Canadians just the smallest break, and then bring it back to Amalie Arena for the final and winning of the Stanley Cup. So she's talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning being so good, they could just ease up on the Canadians, lose the game tonight, game four, and bring back the series to Tampa. So there's game five. They could win it at home. She's trying to call their shots as if they're in control of it. How cocky is Tampa? There you go.
Here's another little kick in the shin for you. You play the Tampa Bay game, I could play the Milwaukee game with you. Our neighbors to the north, they're schooling the Cubs, 8.5 up in the National League Central. And your Milwaukee Bucks, Steve, the team that you have always been attached to, they put themselves in position to potentially win an NBA title. So it is all around them.
Yeah, you know what? The Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, we finally get that long-awaited matchup, the one everybody wanted, Bobby Portis against Cam Payne.
They love the former Bull, Bobby Portis, in Milwaukee.
And they love
chanting his name. He is, you know what he is? He is like what Andres Nocioni was to those aughts Chicago Bulls, where it was like he was far from the best player, but it was the best chant, the Nocioni chants, and that's what Bobby Portis is. Far from their best player with the surprise eyes and all, but they love Bobby Portis, and the lasting legacy that Portis has in his 3.5 years in Chicago is punching a guy.
He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We'll take a break when we come back. Mark, Jim Thome, I don't know. You do not want to make him mad. I don't know. It's possible for him to get mad. You don't want to make the nicest man in the world mad, but I think you just might, given one of your specific opinions. I will talk about that. I will bring it to you, and we'll get your response to it next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome and welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody. Saturday suckage on Monday. It's all the same. We suck so you don't have to. We're filling in for Molly and Han now. We'll be filling in for Bernstein and Rahimi as this suckathon goes till 9. Mark, there is this tweet from Andrea Thome, wife of Jim, the nicest man ever made. And her tweet goes like this. If the Sandlot comes on in our house, it doesn't matter what else is happening, Jim will sit down and watch it. And it comes on a lot. I love the Sandlot. Mark Grody, you're about to get, I mean, Jim Thome is the father in The Incredibles, and he's going to hit you with that big fist for what you're about to say. Mark, what do you think about the Sandlot as a movie?
I could not have been more disappointed in The Sandlot when I finally viewed it about, 7 years ago for the first time in my life. And everybody told me that this is the quintessential baseball movie. And I, like many, grew up playing baseball. I played it in high school. I love baseball. And I didn't... That movie ended up being about a bunch of kids trying to get a ball back from a dog. That's what that movie was about. They spent so much time on that. Like, that was the... Like, if they had kept with the baseball theme and these kids playing in the Sandlot, like, I love the motif and the idea, because we could all relate to it as playing baseball and grow... Like, I did that. Like, I tried to get kids together and play baseball when I was a youngin'. That's what we did. But no, we did not spend hours trying to get a ball back from a dog. That is what that movie is about. I was hugely disappointed in that, and that's just, it's a fact. It's not a great movie. Fact.
It's a wonderful movie. Benny the Jet Rodriguez and Vin Scully's calling his name. Vin Scully is always, and he's stealing home, and it's just, it's great. I love that movie. I think that's terrific. And we had the director and writer on of The Sandlot, and he told us how some of the things were made, and it was just wonderful. It was great.
Count me out.
Yeah. Well, we will.
If somebody said, hey, Mark, you want to have the director of The Sandlot on, I would say no. I would have him on. I would have him on and say, why did you spend so much time on kids trying to get a ball back from a dog?
Because the ball was signed by Babe Ruth, Grody. That's why.
And then Darth Vader is going to get out of his chair, Grody, and punch you. That's why.
I watched Return of the Jedi yesterday. It was on yesterday. I love for the weekend television programming, like on just terrestrial TV, because it's all superhero movies and Star Wars. And Jedi was on yesterday, and it was just delightful.
By the way, it gives us a nice segue. Do you think Gary Grody is listening right now?
I'll make sure he is. If he isn't, I bet you he is. He's
number
a P1.
Number 8 of the top movie lines, most famous one on AFI's top 100 lines in 100 years. Number 8 is May the Force Be With You. Number 1 is Frankly, My Dear, I Don't Give a Damn. Number 2 is I'm Going to Make Him an Offer He Can't Refuse. Number 3 is more than one line, so this is where this whole thing is a lie. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. Could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Number 4 is Toto. I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. Number 5 is Here's Looking at You, Kid. Number 6 on AFI's list, Go Ahead, Make My Day. Number 7, all right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up. And number 8, may the force be with you.
See, now, may the force be with you is great, but I think the better line is the Vader, I'm your father line. Like, I think that's one of the greatest lines in cinema history.
Yeah, it is. See, we got this argument. So we're filling in for Molly and Ha, even though their show would be over now, but they would still be on the air for Transition. Mark Grody filled in for Mike Mulligan last Friday. He was with David Ha. And the discussion turned to country music, right? Wasn't that the Ha and Grody?
Yeah, because David is he's a big country music fan. He used to work he was a country music star, or I should say country music jock star in his old hometown. So yeah, that's how that came up the other day with on the Molly and Ha show with me.
All right, well, we'll see if he was a Johnny Cash come lately, because this jogged my memory about a story I wrote in the early 80s. It's a most wonderful thing that involves one of the most famous sports teams you're ever going to hear about and one of the most remarkable lists that you're ever going to hear. And I will discuss that. I will discuss that with you, Mark, after
this.
Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody at Saturday Suckage on Monday. The WB Club always in session. We suck so you don't have to on this holiday suckage, as a texter corrects us. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.